You're listening to Stop Feeding the Predators on City of Angels Recovery Radio. My name is Lynn, and I have with me today a gentleman who is going to allow me to ask him some questions. He understands sexual assault of children, and he's going to hopefully offer some insight for people who are still thinking that sexual assault only happens to little girls in bad neighborhoods by, you know, drunken men or whatever. Todd, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Tell me a little bit about you, and again, no graphic details, but just a little bit about you as to what made you agree to an interview and a little bit of what you've been through.
Well, I agreed to the interview because, like you said, there's a lot of people out there that obviously think it probably only happened to them. So, like you said, it's better for more people to talk about it than less people will feel so alone.
Right.
You know, because obviously, you know, I spent a lot of years not knowing who to talk to about it, you know, so I would sit there in my own isolation, you know, not having anybody to really talk to about it, so. But anyway, my situation,
And only what you're comfortable telling.
Yeah.
Okay? The thing is, you are a male who was sexually assaulted as a child.
Yes.
If you want to elaborate on that, that's up to you, but it's not necessary.
Right.
It's not necessary.
No. Mine happened, I guess, between the ages of probably about 5 to 13.
Okay.
Maybe 6 to 13. I guess my situation involved, I guess, a step-parent. And we moved about every 9 to 12 months when I was little. So,
were you within the same school district and city, or you just moved completely?
We may have moved maybe to a different place in the city, but you
changing
know,
schools.
Yeah, but we generally moved city to city.
Okay.
You know, and I don't remember why. You know, it might have been my stepdad didn't have that great of a job, or, you know, there was some alcoholism in there, so that might have been part of the problem. My mom doesn't really remember why we moved so much, but,
right,
you know, there were oftentimes in one grade I would be in two different schools, you know.
Right.
All the way up until I was probably about 15, we finally settled down, but, you know, but my case involved, I guess, my stepdad. I had babysitters.
Mm-hmm.
Neighborhood, I guess, older boys and girls my age.
Right.
You know, because every time we would move,
you had to relearn a whole new group of friends.
Yeah.
And who was safe and who wasn't. And
you know, and like I said, we talked about earlier, you know, once it started happening,
right,
you know, it felt like, in a way, I had a sign on my head that says, I've already been abused, you know, go for it, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, I've said in previous shows, I've made the comment, I didn't like it, I didn't want it to happen, but it was familiar.
Mm-hmm.
So when it would start happening again, there was part of me that was like, oh yeah, I remember, I hate this, but I guess this is what happens.
Yeah.
Because as a child, I didn't know any different. I didn't know this was never supposed to have happened.
Right.
So I couldn't protect myself later because I didn't know it was wrong the first time, I didn't know it was wrong the sixth time.
Right. Well, like we said earlier, when you're a child, you can't describe what just happened to you. You have
right.
nothing to relate it to. It's, you know, like I said, it's not like somebody stole my crayon.
Right.
Or stole my homework or punched me. you know, you have no words to describe those things because it's not even in your vocabulary yet.
Right.
You know, so I think that was the biggest trouble, you know, or the problem. It's like, I don't know what happened.
Right.
I know something happened, but I can't describe it.
Right. Something that I didn't like and didn't want happened, and
right.
I don't know why, and I can't say more than that.
Right.
Yeah. But that had to be really difficult moving so often, because your core support people would be your mom, your stepdad, and, you know, whatever immediate family that moved with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I can imagine the kind of loneliness that you endured if a family member or, you know, babysitter, whatever, was causing this problem. You didn't really have a support group that you could find someone to be comfortable with enough to tell them what had happened.
That's, yeah. I mean, that was part of the problem. But at the same time, you know, when, if something happened in that particular place we were at, you know, the nice thing is, well, at least I thought in the beginning, you know, we're moving somewhere else.
Right.
You know, it's right. Okay. You know, out of the situation.
I'll
you know,
be out of here soon.
Until it would happen again.
Yeah.
And, you know, someplace new. You know, my mom was very trusting of the neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when I was growing up until we lived in Columbus.
That's
until
okay.
Until I was six.
That's okay.
And we lived in one of those neighborhoods where all the parents knew each other.
Right.
And they would have block parties.
Right.
And in that particular neighborhood, the parents could let the kids go out and never have to worry because the parents were also, they knew each other. They would hang out and talk to each other. You
right.
know? And you don't get that so much in all the neighborhoods anymore. There's a lot of people that likes to keep to themselves. So what that did is I think that gave, you know, my mom a false feeling of security that,
right.
you know, if I could trust this neighborhood, wherever we go, you know,
I can
it'll
trust
be
all
the
my
same.
Neighbors. Yeah.
You know, but that's not always the case.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you move into a new area, and if you're too trusting of them, you know, then things like that happen, and obviously it does. And
well, and even for families that stay in, like you were saying, that neighborhood where everybody knew everybody, oftentimes, you know,
people
are sexually assaulted by someone that is known to them.
Yeah, that's true.
And too often, families will grow up, you know, I always think of like the Wonder Years TV show and that kind of stuff where everybody knew everybody in the neighborhood. And, you know, if you weren't having dinner at your house, your mom knew you were having dinner at your best friend's house,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. But people, you're talking about false sense of security. People would say, well, I know these people.
Right.
You know, I trust them with my kids.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 20 years down the road, find out, you know, one of those people that you loved and trusted your neighbor and trusted your child with was sexually assaulting his own kid.
Yeah.
You know, or her own kid, you know, whichever.
Right.
And I compare that, you know, false sense of security when people say, well, I only trust my kids to be babysat by family members. And I say, that's the equivalent of a background check. Just because the person seems like they're okay really just means they haven't gotten caught yet. You know, my ex-husband, he would have passed every background check you ever could have come up with. Because he hadn't gotten caught yet.
That's true.
You know? So, on I understand what you're saying. On one hand, it was tough to develop a sense of who to trust because every time you moved, you had to reestablish who are my friends, who can mm-hmm. I trust, who's a bully. You know, I know we didn't use terms like that back then, but where do you fit in and who are your friends? And at the same time, your mom's thinking, well, I can trust these people
mm-hmm.
until they give her a reason not to. And
right.
sounds like you guys moved often enough.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, because when we left Ohio, we went to Tennessee, you know, so, you know, that took basically away my grandparents, my real dad, my aunt and uncle or any of my other immediate family that I could have even told.
Yeah.
You know, or that might have been able to help.
The people that would have been able to help, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I wasn't able to, because my real dad and my mom divorced at 4. And, you know, it was one of those divorces where I wasn't allowed to see my dad anymore, so.
Right.
You know, which made it tough, because if I would have at least been able to see my dad, you know, during that process, shared parenting or something like that.
Right.
Might have been a little bit easier because, you know, my real dad said, had he known.
Right.
You know, so it's just one of those things when you I got taken out of where all of our family was here in Ohio. And, yeah, hop skipping around in Tennessee, and then we moved Northwest Ohio up there, and, you know, still you're far enough away, and,
right,
you know, so.
Well, and by that point, you've lost touch with people that even when you try to reconnect, it's like learning them all over again, like the friends and such. But I hear what you're saying. If your dad had been in your life, even if it was an every other weekend kind of thing or whatever, that at least would have been another adult in your life who could have picked up on something. Mm-hmm. Something's going on.
Yeah.
You know, whether you told or not, that'd be one more adult who could have protected you.
Right.
You know, or who could have been there if you'd said, you know, what had happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can relate to the moving all the time. My mom used to joke that as soon as the oven got dirty, we moved.
Mm-hmm.
We moved every 2 years when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was fortunate enough to stay in a couple of same school districts. So the kids that I knew in kindergarten, I met back up with later when I was in 7th and 8th grade, because mm-hmm. we moved back to that school district. And some of the kids I knew, like 2nd and 3rd grade, when I got to 5th grade at a different school district, their parents moved the same time we moved.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we didn't live near each other, we were in the same school again.
Right.
So I had that bonus of, even though I moved a lot, there were still people I knew either from way back or just from a couple years back that moved at the same time. You know, my best friend, I've known her since 2nd grade. And, you know, we're both 47. I joke with her that she can't turn 48 until I turn 48. But, you know, there's something about being able to have that best friend throughout mm-hmm. your life. And, you know, she and I, even though I say best friend, we're not real close. We don't talk often, you know, we don't have the connection like we used to. But knowing that there's a person that I've known since 2nd grade who has an idea of what I've been through my life, I mean, that's comforting to me. Because
mm-hmm.
family sometimes denies what I've been through.
Mm-hmm.
For the longest time, my mom would say, you know, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to think about it.
You know, that's the same thing I got. My mom never wanted to talk about it.
Yeah. No.
It was always, can you remember the good times and not the bad times? And, you know, sometimes I would tell her, I don't remember many good times. you know, and it's funny, one of the things I did a couple years ago is I took all my childhood pictures and I wanted to look at them.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to scan them in and put them on my computer, and because I was upset at my mom, and I kind of wanted to, you know, I want my childhood pictures, but I don't want to have to come over to your house to get them. I'm going to scan them all.
Right.
And that was one of the toughest things for me, because the pictures brought back more memories than I remembered.
I'm sure.
And I would look at those pictures, and, you know, there was a lot of them, those pictures that would trigger other things, trigger other memories. And then I had to stop.
Yeah.
You know, so it was one of those things where I thought it was a good idea until I got involved into it. And, you know, but you see pictures and then all of a sudden flashbacks or something comes and it's like, oh my goodness, you know.
Right.
Close it. Or I threw away a lot of pictures. My mom probably doesn't know, but yeah, I threw away quite a bit of pictures. A lot of them were my stepdad. you know, are pictures that, you know, had some memories that I didn't really want to remember. So yeah. There were some pictures I got rid of. So
yeah.
One of my friends at the time thought it would be good therapy if maybe I burned some of those pictures, you know, to kind of release it. And so it was some good release.
Right.
There were some pictures of my stepdad and others that I burned, and I felt good, you know, because I burned it.
Right. It's gone forever.
Yes.
Right.
So that was a little bit of good therapy, but, you know, once again, I probably don't recommend people go and do that, I guess, especially if they don't want to open up new wounds or open up new memories they forgot about. Or
yeah. No, I found for myself, I have a lot of unusual triggers. My daughter is big into comic books and, you know, fantasy world type stuff. And all of a sudden one day I said, you know, I'm glad that you're into that stuff and I don't have a problem with you doing that, but don't expect me to like it. And she said, why? Why do you have a problem with this stuff? And I said, well, I was raped when Star Trek was on, and so now I can't stand anything related to sci-fi. And my daughter just was staring at me, and I was suddenly staring back, and I put my hand over my mouth, and I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, I didn't have a problem with her liking, you know, Spider-Man and comic books and all these different kinds of things, because it didn't really bother me. And then all of a sudden one day, you know, she and her friends had been talking all these different, you know, sci-fi this and that and Star Trek and Star Wars and all kinds of, excuse the expression, geek type stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it just hit me all of a sudden, and I said that, and I heard myself say it, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's horrible. And then I thought, oh wow, I just totally ruined Star Trek for my daughter. And my daughter's like, no, I wasn't raped during it. It doesn't, you know, doesn't trigger anything for me. I'm glad you figured that out for you. But it's weird. The more I heal from what I've been through, it's weird how new things come up to trigger something that I had forgotten about. You know, they say that, you know, a sense of smell is like the strongest fragrance, you know, that brings back memories. For some people, you know, the smell of coffee or the smell of bacon reminds them of, you know, being at grandma's on the farm or, you know, something happy or whatever. And we had Stop Feeding the Predators had a fundraising garage sale a couple months back. And one of the items that was donated was a bar of lavender soap. It was this very expensive, ritzy, you know. And I was like, oh, this is really pretty. And I picked it up and I smelled it. And I was taken back to, you know, horrible, horrible memories that I never wanted to have.
Yeah.
And I thought, wait a minute, I'm healed from this. You know, I founded Stop Feeding the Predators. I'm all better. I'm okay. And it was just that reality that no matter how much we heal, and we're doing well, things are good, and we're a better person, there will probably always be something that will come up in my life that will trigger something in me to remind me of something that I've buried, that I've tried to forget. And I don't say that to discourage people from finding healing. But when these things come up now, they're more a trigger for healing than a trigger for trauma. You know, when I made that comment about Star Trek, I was like, okay, this is something I have to look at. It wasn't like I was suddenly thrown back and, you know, oh my gosh. And, you know, the lavender soap, my grandfather had raped me when I was a teenager. After that, I tried to never have anything to do with him, to not be anywhere near him and all of that. But prior to that, and he never groomed me, he never made sexual comments, he never told jokes, he wasn't a drunk, he wasn't a a womanizer, I don't know the right word. He was just a guy. He could fix stuff. He kind of reminded me of Archie Bunker. I mean, he was just a good guy. But he always had lavender soap in the shop, and I don't know why. Maybe it was calming to him while he's, you know, doing woodworking stuff or something. I have no idea. It could be that my grandmother bought the soap and said, I hate this, it smells terrible, get it out of here, and he didn't want to throw it away. I mean, I don't know, because he seemed to always have the exact same bar, you know, of soap, whichever shop he was in, and by shop, I mean like his woodworking and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So the lavender soap actually took me to good memories of him.
Mm-hmm.
But then I had to deal with that reminder that that's not who he was in my later years.
Right.
You know, and sometimes there's people in our lives that do abusive things to us, and it's so hard to separate the person that we love and, you know, have a relationship with as a family member or something like that, and having to separate almost schizophrenically, having to separate out the part of them that we hate for what they're doing to us.
Yes. Well, you know, I guess going back to what you said about new triggers, I guess dealing with any kind of trauma, I guess, is kind of like, I guess you've got a laundry basket of 30 clothes, and maybe the first issue you try and deal with is that dirty shirt on top, and you take it out and you get it washed and it's clean, and all of a sudden, you know, maybe you've got other dirty clothes in there, and, you know, maybe the next trigger trauma comes about that you remember, and you know, just to give an analogy, it's a pair of jeans, you know, and so this one comes out and you work on that one, not knowing how far your dirty
laundry
goes down in the basket. But, you know, that's one thing I've realized, there's been some things that I've worked on to get healing, and, you know, I'll feel good for a few months and think, you know, hey, it's all good. And then
I'm better.
I don't realize there's more dirty laundry in there, you know,
and you don't
know what's going to come up. So, you know, that was the hardest thing I had to deal with, was I was thinking it would be something that would be healed quickly. You know,
get
this done in 3 to 6 months, I can be good, move on. And, you know, I guess I had that positive mindset, and, you know, I got a lot of things out. Because I think you do a lot of your healing in the beginning part. So you get a lot of the emotions out. You know, I think you do the majority of your healing in the beginning, but, you know, it's just the other part, you know, might take a while, you know, because, you know, like I said, I went for a couple of months and I was all good until something else hit me, you know, something new.
Right.
You know, then it's just like, oh my goodness, really?
Now I have to deal with this.
Yeah. You know, so it has been frustrating, you know, because it's almost like a roller coaster ride. You know, you just don't know when, you know, you're going to be at the end of the roller coaster ride, you know. I guess you go up the big hill and go down and get the majority of it, you know, and then you got those other bumps and winds and corkscrews,
right,
you know, before you get to the end. So, you know, it's just not knowing where the end is, so.
Well, and a lot of times we go through the roller coaster ride only to discover that the end of the roller coaster ride is the beginning line for a different ride that we weren't expecting that we were about to go on.
Oh, goodness. Don't tell me that. I'm hoping to get off the car at the end. You're like, going through again. But no, I mean, yeah, I guess you got to do what you have to do to get the healing, so.
Yeah.
But, you know, one thing I realize, it's, you know, it's often not a quick process. You know, I think everybody I mean, that's kind of like lose weight fast and right. 30 days, you know, a lot of people, because that's what I thought when I went into it, you know, I could, 30 days, you know, I'll be great, you know, but not always the case, especially, you know, the longer you bury it in there, you know, because a lot of what I did is, you know, yeah, now I'm 42, I compartmentalized all of that, you know, until the age of 40.
Right.
You know, and all of a sudden I couldn't keep it in there anymore. You know, I had a lot of things that came all at once. You know, the stress at the job and the ex, you know, the therapy, the memories, and it's just everything like a 2 liter, you know, shaken up and the lid came off and, you know, I had a lot of anxiety attacks, panic attacks. Like I told you, you know, and especially if there's any adults, there's probably a lot of adults listening to this show, but
we hope.
But one of the hardest things I had to deal with was I didn't understand when you go through some of this is that you'll have moments where you go into your childhood. Like I told you, I wouldn't understand why I would go and I would get into a fetal position or I would go into a corner and cry for hours like a child. And it wasn't making sense to me.
Yeah, you know, you thought you'd lost your mind.
Because if you cry as an adult, you know, it's usually, you know, something, you cry like an adult. And I've cried like an adult before, you know, you're right. At a funeral and things like that. But I had never experienced going back in time, you know, and crying. My inner child was crying.
Right.
And I didn't understand it. You know, I didn't understand what was going on to me, you know, or with me, you know, so.
And that had to make you feel like less of a person because you have something so emotional.
It was scary.
Something so emotional happening.
I was. I was in a state of fear in a way because I was going through those emotions and here I am in my house. I've got 2 dogs, you know, but I was there alone.
Right.
And I'm having these emotional outbursts and all these feelings. And in a way I felt like, you know, I was a 5-6-year-old kid in a house all alone.
Right.
You know, so after I got done crying, you know, or whatever, I felt alone, isolated, you know, and sometimes I didn't want to come out of the house, or it was just, you get into a childlike mentality when you're kind of going through that, so, you know, that's a tough thing, you know. Now, if somebody else would have been there, well, it might have been embarrassing, I'm not sure.
Well, and also, you know, if you had some kind of warning of what you were about to go through, is there even somebody that you'd feel comfortable saying, hey, be with me while I completely lose my mind? Because, I mean, I know you weren't losing your mind, but I'm sure that's how it had to feel.
Oh, it did. It really did.
It makes you question your own sanity when your emotions are so overwhelming that it's nothing you've experienced before.
Mm-mm. No. No. You know, but it's one of those things where, you know, I didn't cry at all, I guess, during my childhood. You know, there was just never really an opportunity, you know, because, you know, my stepdad was an alcoholic, so we were always on eggshells, you know, because didn't know when he was going to flip out.
Right.
And, you know, because my stepdad was physically abusive, emotionally abusive. You know, I kind of had all 3 different versions from him.
Right.
Or my sister, you know, because I had a sister. My sister, I think she may have got some emotional abuse from him, but she was his daughter, so she kind of, she didn't get the full, she didn't, I guess she didn't get what I got, but she did get a little, because it's naturally...
What was in the
You know, when he's an alcoholic, she's going to get some of it anyway, you know,
right.
So... But... You know, so it's just one of those things. You know, so yeah, I have a trigger with, like beer cans, because my stepdad used to stack them up in a pyramid. And so I would come by sometimes. The first couple times it was okay, but I'd knock them over, because you're a kid, you know,
right.
It's got a
Somebody
metal beer
it.
Can.
Somebody's supposed to knock it
so
down.
So I would throw a ball and knock it down, and, you know, and... You know, he must not have been there the first couple times when I do it. I mean, not to mention, I think I had my first beer when I was 6 or 7, so I was very, I would get excitable, so I would jump on the couch, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think a couple times I'd hit the lamp, but, you know, and he just had so much beer out, you know, so which, but, you know, the first time I knocked over the beer cans, when he was sitting there, you know, was not good, you know. I didn't know, you know. A kid doesn't know. So it's one of those things, like, I can't knock over the beer cans anymore, but, you know, so I get triggers, you know, so I can't go to parties. If I see a bunch of cans there,
right.
I have to leave.
Right.
A couple cans, you know, so it's just those triggers.
Right.
You know, so I just had to avoid them.
Right. Ned, have you spoken with your sister about what you... went through as a child? Do you know if she went through similar physical assault?
No, she did not get any the physical or sexual assault.
Okay.
She did get some emotional, because it's weird. She remembers a lot of the physical assaults, you know, because, you know, it's one thing to punish your child when they do something wrong, sober.
Right.
You know, but... in an alcoholic rage, you know, it was kind of... Until he was done venting everything. You know, so I actually had a couple of out-of-body experiences when I was younger, when some of the physical abuse would happen. That I remember leaving the body. And... Which was good, because it was protective, so...
Right. The trauma was just too much.
Yeah, but my sister remembers the physical abuse. You know, during the sexual abuse, I don't think my mom or sister was around, because my mom would work nights, you know, so she wasn't home, you know, because
right.
he would be home with him and me and my sister, and, you know, so... You know, my mom wouldn't have witnessed any of that, you know, or the physical abuse, because I don't think he would do it when my mom was there.
Right.
You know, which makes sense, because, you know, when I go back and I think about some of the physical stuff, I don't remember my mom being there.
Right.
You know, now I did tell my mom about some of it, but, you know, so there's a good chance, you know... She might not have been there, but my sister does remember some of the stuff, you know.
Right.
She would say that I remember, you know, and so.
So she grew up witnessing
at least
some of what was happening.
Oh, yeah. You know, so, you know, because he would probably be on his best behavior when my mom was around, so.
Yeah.
You know, but it's one of those things, you don't remember everything. You know, you just remember what you do remember. Sometimes you don't want to remember everything.
I was about to say, sometimes you remember even the stuff you don't want to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I forget who I talk to. I think, you know, because, you know, I've been to therapy a little bit, but I think I've asked my therapist if they make an amnesia pill yet, or it would be nice to amnesia some of the stuff through childhood, I guess. So.
Well, I think we already do that instinctively to protect ourselves. That's how
yeah.
we get, you know, to being grown adults, and then...
That's what I should invent, the amnesia pill. Selective amnesia. If you don't want to remember 10 years of your childhood, no...
Well, I will put you on the spot just a little bit. which would you say is better, to forget about what happened or to work through as painful as what you're enduring?
Depends on the day.
So it's day to day, moment to moment, depending on the trigger, depending on the mood.
It's just sometimes, sometimes I try and I do the work on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, sometimes the memories are kind of bad sometimes where I wish there was an easier way out.
Yeah.
It's just kind of.
Yeah. You're looking for like that diet pill to drop 30 pounds right now.
Yes. Just get rid of it all. And then I could be like, man, my childhood was perfect. I don't remember it. But by God, so it's one of those things. It's people have to know it's not always going to be easy.
Right.
It's going to be difficult.
Right.
But it doesn't mean for everybody. Like I said, we were talking earlier. I've talked to other people. Some children are more sensitive than others, because
right.
I had a friend that it happened to him in Boy Scouts, and he said it never really bothered him.
Right.
So people are different, so.
Right. But he was assaulted by someone that was similar age.
Similar age. So, and it was more in his teenage years. So I think that makes, a little bit of difference, because at least in your teenage years, you're a little bit more, because we're talking about probably 14 years old,
right.
15.
Right.
And it was somebody.
He's already heard sex jokes.
Exactly. So he could have.
It changes it a bit.
Yeah. But when you're much younger, you have no words to describe
right.
what just happened.
Right.
You've not seen it on cartoons yet.
Right.
You've not. But now you got today's TV where.
Yeah, you've got Disney shows where they're slipping the word sex into clouds. What was that, Lion King, I think it was, or something like that?
So if you guys are hearing this, do not let your children watch Disney movies anymore. Sorry, Walt. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff that they seek in there subliminally. Subliminally, and it's just amazing. It's and Hollywood has got its own issues. Like I said, that show came on the other day. I don't know if it was Entertainment Tonight. Some of the Hollywood actors that were young, when they got into Hollywood when they were in their younger years, and that industry is ladled with predatory type people,
right?
Because those kids are young,
right?
Most of them are beautiful, beautiful girls, beautiful boys. They're in show business,
and their parents are constantly telling them go and do whatever the producer says, and you have to meet with this person and be nice and don't blow it, and
exactly, they're gonna,
this is your big chance.
They're gonna pay you all this amount of money.
Yeah.
And that would probably even be harder, because now they got a career.
Right, right, and the pressure's on. And if you're a teenage star or a child star and you blow the whistle about something happening, you're done.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's been, today's day and age, it's a lot better than it was when I was a child. Because back in the day, you didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
It was a hush-hush secret in the family. They didn't talk about it on TV. It wasn't well known. There was no support groups back then.
Right.
Even for women, that were victims of that stuff, because my mom was a victim for my stepdad, too. She had very little resources to go to.
Right.
So all I can say is in today's day and age, it's definitely a lot better, and there's a lot more resources,
Yeah.
So society has definitely moved I guess, in the right direction in terms of recognizing it, number one, you know, offering help, where to go. You know, there's a lot more people you can talk to about it. Well, like I said earlier, you know, now they got 911. They didn't have 911 when I was little, so.
Right.
You know, that's one thing. You know, we talked about that. Maybe, you know, if kids go to their parents or they go to their family and they go to their neighbors and nobody's listening or believing them, they can always dial 911. Because then it's an official report.
Right. So if a child's being sexually assaulted and they can't tell their parents for whatever reason, or they don't feel comfortable telling their parents, if they don't have a trusted neighbor or teacher or friend, you know, friend that's an adult, call 911.
Yeah.
And say, I'm a kid and somebody's hurting me, you know?
Yeah, because your parents are not going to be like, let me get a piece of paper out and a pen and I'm going to write up a little report here. You know, so then it, you know, it becomes official, but, you know, I don't know. I've never really thought about the 911 too much. There might be some drawbacks because, you know, I don't know. You got the parent situation or, you know, like I said, when I told my mom about, you know, some of the stuff that was going on, you know, what my stepdad had done, and, you know, it made it worse for me, from my stepdad's point, you know, because I said something.
Now, did you say something in front of him, or was it...
No, just to my mom. Okay. You know, I took her in my, you know, she came in my room, and, you know, and I told her, and she went and talked to him, and...
Okay.
You know, okay. She said, he said he was drunk, and...
Right.
You know, he didn't know, you know... Well, like I said, he thought that I was my mom, or, you know, it might have been dark. I don't really remember, but, you know, she kind of always took his word for it, but...
Well, and too many times, parents tend to dismiss kids because we're kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
They just made it up. They saw it on Jerry Springer.
Exactly. You know? And parents... sometimes we'll say, well, you're so young, you must be confused.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you misunderstood. And even now, I agree with what you're saying, that our, as society, we're starting to get better about listening to people when they say something is abusive going on.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's still a lot of people who say things like, well, what did you do? Or, well, what were you wearing? Or, well, were you drinking with him? And I'm not saying that's the case in your case. I'm just saying that sometimes when somebody does come forward, too many times they're hit with a bunch of questions that imply that they were at fault as well.
Right.
And
you must have instigated it.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah. What did you do? Yeah.
And that goes back to one of those things I had a hard time dealing with. You know, up until it all exploded was, what did I do to deserve it, or what did I do? Because I always had that in my mind. You know, surely I must have done something to ask for it. Or, you know, because I would sit there and I would analyze the entire, you know, each situation. And I would play back in my mind trying, you know, like a movie.
What could I have done
differently?
What
did I... You know, I was trying to remember what I did before that led up to that. I was trying to play my mind.
Right.
You know, trying to figure out if maybe I did something to ask for it, or, you know, I was trying to figure out that part, you know, because the part of when it happens usually sticks into your mind, or sometimes, because some people remember... a lot about it. Some people remember very little. Some people have no memory at all.
Right.
I don't remember all of it. Because there are some times when I go back earlier to the age of 3 or 4, I think it started even younger, but I'm not for sure.
Right.
You know, because...
Something seems off, but you're not sure why.
Yeah. You know, because it was just... Well, you know, my biggest problem, well, I don't want to say it was my problem, but like when my sister was born, when I was six, my sister had a neck problem. So my mom would sleep in the crib with my sister, you know, for, I don't know, probably for the first 5 years, because my sister had neck problems, so, you know, so I would either sleep in my bed or sleep in my stepdad's bed, so, which didn't help the situation.
Right.
Because my mom was not sleeping in bed with my stepdad.
Right.
She was, you know, with my sister, so, you know, so there's some other things, you know. You know, I don't know. I just, I sit and I think about that, and I just think how bizarre that is. You know,
that. Well, and if I may be bold enough to say this, whether you were in the bed and your stepdad came to bed after he got home from work or whatever, when he was done drinking or whatever, whether you were in his bed or you were in your bed, certainly he had a problem if he cannot tell the difference between his stepson and his wife.
True.
So whether he didn't care who it was, or he was too drunk to know the difference, or whatever mental state he was in that it didn't matter, that problem all belongs to him.
Yeah, because he was a good 6 foot plus, very aggressive,
yeah,
very dominant kind of person. So
yeah, so again, helping you with the healing.
True. Sometimes I look back and I'm just like, you know, maybe if mom wouldn't have had to sleep in the bed with my, the crib or whatever, it's just like, you know, maybe, you know, you second play and you second
right.
guess and be like, you know,
you're trying to fix it backwards.
Yeah, trying to fix it backwards. There's sometimes, I go back in my mind and I want to go back in time.
Yep.
And fix it, you know. It's just like, can I go back in time? God, just let me go back
and
just
it's
change a few of these things and then.
Yeah, and it's like a really horrible car wreck that you were in today. And you spend the next 6 months trying to say, well, if I didn't go to work that day, if I'd gone the other way, if I'd stopped at the store first, if I'd gone to visit my friend afterwards, you know, and you mentally beat yourself up for being on that road on that day at that particular time.
Yeah. I know.
And I hope it helps for you to think of it this way. Even if you were in your own bed, in your own room, and your mom was in her bed, I hate to emphasize this, but your stepfather probably would have come to your room first. And the reason I say that is because rape and sexual assault of children is about power and control.
Yeah.
And from the things you and I've talked about, not on this show, from the things that we've talked about, he was going to take you down and make sure you knew he was the boss at all times, no matter what.
Yeah. That's true, but
So, if you will, when you start beating yourself up with, but if I hadn't been in the bed, but if I hadn't been in the room, because.
And I think the reason for thinking like that sometimes is, you know, sometimes it's that child brain that's thinking like that, you know, because the adult brain probably wouldn't think like that, but. You know, but sometimes when you get into that mode, you know, I swear sometimes, your brain goes back in time and you think different, you know?
You think like a child. And a child says, if I saw a train wreck, I know how to fix that train wreck from happening is not have two trains on the same track at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. So as adults, we do tend to look at our past abuse and think of it like a child. You know, if Star Trek wasn't on TV, I probably wouldn't have gotten raped. and it had nothing to do with what was on TV, you know?
Well, unfortunately, Gene Roddenberry is already gone.
Yep.
If he was still alive, we could probably... See, there's my brain thinking. But, yeah. So anyway, yeah. It's just... Yeah, I don't know if anybody else is... I did speak to a therapist a couple of weeks ago that does... I think it's some kind of cranial therapy where they can... Tissue has memory in the brain, right. I guess. And so they were, you know, I called and talked to her, seeing if I could set something up where maybe they can, you know, kind of heal that. Because sometimes, I mean, the brain is a complex thing. And, you know, when you go through any kind of trauma, the brain is so complicated. It's one of those things that it's not quick to heal. It's not like a broken arm or a broken leg. The brain is a lot more complicated.
Right. It locks away the parts that are too painful to deal with.
Yeah. And so that's one of the things I asked her. I was like, does any of your parents or any of your patients ever complain about, you know, when they go through some of the memories that they have these childlike reactions? And she's like, almost all of them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's one of those things I didn't know at first, you know, so I guess if anybody's listening, well, obviously people are listening, but if they have those same childlike emotions or responses or anything, it's one of those things that happens, you know. I never encountered it before, so, you know, it's one of those things, until you heal, you don't realize, you know. You know, had, you know, and that's one of the things we talked about earlier is getting the therapy as soon as possible.
Right.
You know, and I think that's what's great about today's society, you know, because when it does happen, you know, they've done so much research and so much things on it, they know where to take somebody to get the help, you know, where 30, 40 years ago, different story.
Right.
You know, so the sooner you get help, the much better.
Right.
You know, so if anybody's listening, don't wait until, especially for guys, because guys, I've read, tend to wait until they're 40 or above before they even bring it out into the open.
Right.
You know, and, you know, like I said, I tried to do it when I was younger. You know, I tried to talk to my mom about it, you know, even into my teenage years, early 20s, and I just gave up, you know, so I...
You weren't being heard, so...
I wasn't being heard, and so I'm just like, you know, if I compartmentalize it, put it back there, I'll eventually forget about it, you know, it'll just get overwritten by new skills, and it'll be gone, and I'll reach 40 and never remember it again, and...
And
that's
that
not
happen.
The case. That did not happen. So if anybody listening has that strategy, change it. You know, go as soon as possible, you know. And I think there's, you know, a lot more people being more open about it because they read about it and they see it on TV now. And it's so common, you know. But back then, you didn't see the reports on TV or anything.
Right.
And, you didn't see anybody talking about it, you know, so that instantly makes somebody want to subliminally, you know, think, you know, I guess I shouldn't tell anybody about it. I haven't heard about it on TV. Nobody's talking about it. So if they're not talking about it, I'm not going to talk about it.
Right.
You know, so today's society, it's a lot better.
Right.
In terms of reporting.
Yeah. And just like you, when I was a kid, I didn't know it wasn't supposed to happen.
Right.
I knew I didn't like it. I knew I didn't want it to happen.
Right.
I knew that I tried to do things to keep it from happening again later.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line was, I didn't know that I had the right to tell someone and to keep telling until somebody intervened on my behalf and kept me safe. Mm-hmm. I didn't know I had that right.
Right.
And, you know, as an adult, that seems kind of obvious, but when you're a child, you don't have any rights. Or at least that's how it felt.
Well, yeah, that's how it was back then. Because, yeah. You know, that's one of the things that my mom said. I didn't know I had to ask you, you know, to do this or to do that or, you know. But, yeah, I mean, that goes back to parents back then thought that kids didn't have rights. And, you
right.
know, they absolutely need those rights because they can be helpless, you know.
Right.
There's no reason. I mean, they need as much rights as, if not even more.
Right, right. Because this is our next generation. These are the people that we need to help them become the best, healthiest people they can, so that they make healthy life choices. And I'm not talking about, you know, paper and plastic at the grocery store. I'm talking about,
right.
you know, relationship choices and whether or not they get into drug addiction
mm-hmm.
or alcohol addiction or food addiction or whatever. So many times people forget that the reason that people get addictive issues is because they're trying to feel okay within themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So if we raise children to feel okay about themselves, which children normally do that until something happens.
Mm-hmm.
So when something happens, if we can reinstate that feeling of, yes, I'm a kid, yes, I'm happy, I'm a good person. Oh, something bad happened? Okay, it wasn't my fault. Okay, I'm not in trouble. Okay, I'm safe. Okay, I'm a kid, I'm happy. You
yeah.
know, and give them back, like you were talking about the broken arm, you know. Nobody lets their kid get a broken arm and then says, you know, you'll outgrow it. You'll forget about it in time. You know?
Well, it's just kind of weird. Something came to me. You know, it's amazing how kids will tell their parents, you know, you're going to go on a bike ride, wear a helmet, wear elbow pads, wear knee pads.
Wear your seatbelt,
you know, if you're
in the car.
Do, yeah. But... You know, if parents don't warn their kids of, you know, things to look out for in terms of abuse, being touched in unwanted ways, or if they don't give them any kind of information about that at all, you know, they'll never know.
Right.
You know, and I think that's one of the biggest things they could do is, you know, right now is... Well, like we talked about earlier, they do the DARE program in fifth grade. You know, and I think, you know, they need to do, well, like you said, I think they were doing some kind of education program in kindergarten, but, you know, there needs to be some kind of education program done in schools about inappropriate touching and things like that because, you know, maybe not all the parents are going to do it.
Right.
Right. And, you know,
especially when some of the parents are the abusers.
Exactly. You know,
right.
and if it's done in a school environment, you know, a lot of them have the school counselors there where, you know, I guess if I was a kid, or if I was a kid back then, and I was able to tell a counselor, or if I had a class,
right,
you know, where they came in and did a session that, you know, these are things you want to look out for, you know, for your protection as a kid. If, you know, an adult and an older child, you know, a sibling does these certain kind of behaviors or whatever, know that it's wrong and you can feel safe to report it. If I would have been in a class knowing that some of this stuff happened to me and somebody in the class, leading the class, would say that, I'd be like, oh my gosh.
Right.
You know, after class, I can go talk to this person.
Right.
In a school environment, you know, I'm not in my home.
Right.
You know, I don't have to worry about, you know, parents or my, you know, or the sibling or, you know, maybe the neighbor. You know, you're in an environment where you can be open and at least it can be investigated. But,
right.
You know, like I said, it would be nice if they would do it in the schools because, like I said, a lot... You know, I would find it more harmful for a kid to be sexually assaulted than to tamper with, I guess, a drug problem. I don't know. And that's
right.
my only point. That's only my opinion, but the assault really can affect, you know, the adult life and the teenage years and all the other problems it can cause. So I'm just, you know, I don't know. Maybe they'll get to there one day where they can do more upfront education, at least in the schools, or if it's not going to come from the parents. Or
right. Well, we've hit the end of our time, and I would like to thank you for being here. And I will leave everyone with this thought, is people that get into drugs and alcohol are trying to feel okay with themselves. So if we can introduce communication with our children to help them understand their rights to their own bodies, that would actually prevent them from getting into the drugs and alcohol in a lot of cases. I'm not saying every single one. You have been listening to Todd. Thank you for coming.
And thank you for having me.
And Lynn. And this has been Stop Feeding the Predators on City of Angels Recovery Radio. And healing starts here.